Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and this is the America Out Loud Radio Network. So where did I want to start today? You know, normally I'm really wound up, right, by the time I get to everybody. My pages of outrages. Well, instead, I'm going to get to some of those things, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about what I've been doing recently. Staying busy and keeping out and about in the world as the world opens up further and further, faster and faster. Although, in the Northeast, there is threats to shut it down again. Interesting, Miss Kathleen and I, my wife, we are now empty nesters. What does that mean to be an empty nester? Well, I suppose, you know, you raise your children, you get them all out the door, and then you're back to yourselves. Just you and your spouse, your significant other, the love of the life, the girlfriend that so many years ago you started out on this journey with, and then here you are. Geez, we got married in 1983. So we're, 38 years down the road? I got to tell you, it seems like and it feels like the blink of an eye. I think there's some perspective in that much time elapsing away, going so quickly, that it didn't feel like it was happening at the time. You know, there were long days, you know, throughout a life. There are long days when things are difficult or when you have problems or whatever, or you're trying to get through something or your kids are involved in something, whatever. Those days can seem long and dragging on. And when you have a family problem, someone passes away, something like that, it can seem terrible days. But you realize how fast the years string on by. And I look back now and I say, our youngest son, Jack, is just off to college. Now, yes, you say to yourself, gee, Lieutenant Joe, haven't you told us in the past that you're 59? How is it you have a kid heading off to college? Well, let me explain how this happens. You know, I met my beautiful bride, and we hit it off right away. We fell in love, as they say, and we decided, you know, at some point after dating for a while that our future lie together. You know, we would be that combined team, and we would go forward. And we were married in 1983. 2 years later, just shortly after our second anniversary, we were blessed by the Lord God above with our son Joseph. Now that was 1985 when Joe was born, and he was born on Thanksgiving. So when you say to yourself, do you look for signs? What's that movie, Signs, with Mel Gibson? Are you the kind of guy that sees signs, or do you see nothing? Well, you know, sometimes I see signs. And in that, we saw Joe was born on Thanksgiving Day in 1985. It was very, very amazing to me as a young man. You know, you all have heard my story before. My dad passed away early. It was me, my mom, and my brother. And then when I met Kathleen and the whole family fell in love with her, and we made ourselves a team, we got married. And then here's this beautiful little baby. And I wasn't sure exactly what I was going to do. I hadn't started my law enforcement career at that point. I hadn't even really considered a career in law enforcement at that point. I'll take that back. Maybe I had considered it. I just didn't know it would actually work out for me. But we were young. The whole world was in front of us. We were trying to make the best life we could. We were excited to have this little baby. We looked forward to having other children. That's a funny thing. I look back in those 38 years and I say, you know, at the time, I came from two, me and my brother. And Kathleen was her and her brother. You know, we weren't big family people, but my mother, Corrine, she was one of 13. One of 13 brothers and sisters. And I think they actually lost one along the way. Little baby Jimmy, I think he passed away either a few days old. You're going back to the 1930s. Now, so that was not very uncommon, I suppose. But my mom was one of 13, and she had a great relationship with her brothers and sisters throughout the years. My aunts and uncles were all unique, individual people, and really wonderful. Every one of them was a loving person. and fun to be around, you know. And my mother loved kibitzing with them and being together. We used to laugh. We used to call it the witch's cauldron or something, because all of the sisters, though they varied in age, imagine 13 kids, you know, there'd be a big gap between ages. Even though they had all those different age differences between them, they always all got together. You know, you're talking about a day, you know, when was Corrine born? In 1940, my mother was born, and she had sisters that were, you know, almost grown adults, or if not grown adults by the time she was born. And they just had the world was a different place back then. They didn't come from any kind of money. They had no privilege. There's no white privilege going on for them. They were poor, living in Jersey City, in, you know, a railroad car house. Now, for those of you who don't know what a railroad car house is, it's an apartment where basically you step in, the front door of the apartment, and you're in the kitchen. And then the rooms run directly in a row. You go to the first bedroom, which is right off the kitchen. Then maybe there's a bathroom next. You go to the next bedroom, all straight in a row. And depending how many bedrooms you have, you end up in a living room or a parlor, whatever they would call it. And that was your apartment. And as my mother described it, I think it was a three-bedroom apartment. You know, three railroad cars along the way. And the mom and the dad had to have one of those. So then all the other kids lived in those bedrooms together. You know, they slept two and three in a bed. They slept in the living room. It was just a different kind of existence. And I guess that brought them all close. How much fun it must have been as the older kids got old enough to get married and move out. And suddenly maybe you have a pillow to yourself or a blanket to yourself. But when she talked about those days, she didn't talk about them about being poor. She didn't talk about them struggling, trying to eat. She spoke about them in very, very loving ways because it was all about the people. That's what she talked about, her mother, her father, her brothers and sisters, and how they loved each other and got along. It was really always wonderful stories. And I actually got to see some of those railroad apartments. As I was born, my mom and dad got married, and I was born. I was old enough to go visit the family in Jersey City because we moved out of there. My father moved us to the Jersey Shore. But we'd go back up to Jersey City and visit some of the cousins. And some of the cousins were still living in railroad apartments. So I remember them very clearly what they were like. But it was interesting. It was an interesting time, a different world back then. And I don't know. Well, I guess at some point my grandfather passed away. But my grandmother, I guess she got to be an empty nester at some point when all the girls and boys got married and moved out. But that's kind of where we are now, Kathleen and I. And we're looking back, and you see how fast that time goes. How fast does time go for you? You know, where are you in life? Are you appreciating everything you have and everything you've had? I know along the way, because we had some tragedy early on in my familial life, my family losing my dad so early, that I appreciated every minute I had with my family. And I know Kathleen, she wanted to make a family too. She wanted to make a family that would be, I'm not going to say the Brady Bunch kind of a thing, but the classic American family that loved each other, pulled for each other, you know, no dysfunction, just normal stuff, you know, just normal stuff. And we made that over the years. We consciously made that family for our children. And as they came along, then along came Alex. And then we had a gap of about 7 years, I guess, almost 8 years. We thought we were done. We thought our blessings had ended. And suddenly one day, Kathleen finds herself pregnant, and she says, "Guess what? I'm pregnant." And it was kind of like, okay, well, I didn't expect three, but okay, well, here we go. We'll have three. And then the funny story about little Jack, how little Jack comes along. At this point, we were so far down the road that I was taking my son Joe on college trips, right, to go look and see colleges across the country, because he was almost 18 years old, his junior year of high school, and we're looking at colleges, and here his mom is at home pregnant. Well, we went on this lengthy trip. We looked at all, you know, the Northeast Boston area. We checked some Pennsylvanias out. We swung down around a little bit of Virginia. We were gone for about 5 or 6 days, and we come home, and I'm exhausted, and I'm tired. It was really wonderful, you know, Joe was with me the whole time, so we got to have a really good time together as men out on the road. But to see my little Alex and my Marisa Joy, it was really wonderful. And I come home and Kathleen's there to greet me and she missed me and it was really wonderful to be home. And then later on that night, we're just laying in bed relaxing, getting ready to go to sleep. And she says something. She goes, "You know, you are a great father." And I said, "Oh my God, are you kidding me?" She goes, "No." And she was pregnant with little Jack. What a way to find out. "You're a great father." And I knew exactly what she meant when she said it. So she was trying, and she told me, she goes, "I was trying to figure out." She found out while we were gone. She's like, "Oh my gosh, how am I going to tell him he's having a fourth kid? What am I going to do?" And I got to tell you, I was a bit overwhelmed with the idea of four children. You know, how do you raise four children on a cop's salary? How do you raise four children and give them everything they deserve? How do you send four kids to college? How do you pay for that? You know, where does that money come from? You know, all my privilege didn't add up to a lot of dollars, you know, so I don't know who's got all this privilege that it's adding up to such great things. But that was my concern as a young father, is that how was I going to give this family everything they deserved? And I got to tell you, it was a challenge at points. You know, it was difficult. We had to make big decisions as we went along. I remember when the boys, Joey and Alex, started going to school, we had to make a choice. You know, where were we going to send them to school? To our local public school, which was a good school system. You know, it was okay. It wasn't the greatest, but it was good. Good school system. Or did we want to do something more for them? Did we want more for them than we had for us? Well, Kathleen was always a stretcher. She was always found a way to stretch everything into doing things that were beyond who we were, doing things beyond what we were capable of. And she pushed me over the years to be more than I was. And she was really wonderful with that. And she said, "Hey, these kids should go to Catholic school. They're going to get a great education there. They'll get some religious upbringing. There's more rules there. It's more rigid. And they'll have a better chance at life, I think, if they go there than if they go to the public school." Well, at the time, I'm trying to remember back. This was 85, so 5 years later, 1990, when Joe started kindergarten at the Catholic school, I think it was $2,500 a year. Well, if you weren't around in 1990, $2,500 was a lot of money. But I said, "You know what? You're absolutely right. We need to give them the best possible chance we can." So we decided to send them to Catholic school. Now, a couple years later, when Alex is ready to go, they make you a deal at the Catholic school. All right, one kid, $2,500, two kids, $3,500 or something like that. Now, it goes up a little bit each year, but that was the next apple to bite into, $3,500 for two kids. But we did it. We did the best we could. We made ends meet. We did bingo. Anybody who sends their kids to Catholic school knows they give you, it's not just the tuition that you have to pay. Then they tell you, "Well, you have to sell these raffle tickets. Here's your 17 raffle tickets you have to sell to your family and friends. Here's the next set of raffle tickets you have to sell. You have to work bingo if you want to get $500 off your tuition." That's big. That's a big number for a young couple. $500 off, and all you got to do is work bingo, I think, six times a year. So Kathleen was out doing bingo, and I did bingo a couple of times. And it wasn't horrible. You know, there were nice people there, and it was a fun night out. But when we look back at this, we look back at these 38 years and we say, those days, though they were difficult, they were also wonderful. You know, watching these boys grow, watching them do well in school and watching them become who they were. And then along comes Marisa Joy and then Jack. And the big lesson, the big takeaway for me after raising four children, what I didn't think I could do more than two, was that at this point, I look back and I say, yeah, it was tough. It was a stretch. It was financially, it was tough. But I would do 10 had I known now how wonderful it would be to have these four. You know, it's an interesting thing. I worried about the money, but I never thought about we were missing because we were giving the kids really good things. We were giving them a chance at life that we didn't have. You know, our parents did what they could for us and we were doing more. And I can't thank, you know, my in-laws were amazing. You know, Ted, who listens to the show every day. Ted's out there. Ted, how are you? Hope you're having a good day today. Ted and my mother-in-law, Beatrice, were wonderful because they would go on vacation. They would rent a condo in Florida for 2 or 3 weeks. And they would say, hey, listen, if you guys can get yourself down to Florida, you can stay in the condo. Right. So all we had to do was get the gas and get ourselves down to Florida, and we could go to Florida for a week or two. So we did that for a bunch of years in a row. It was really wonderful. And when we had a little more money, we'd say, okay, we'll buy the groceries for the 2 weeks that we're down here. We'll buy all the food. Everybody's going to eat and drink. And, you know, we'll get ourselves down there. And that made vacations for us. We camped. We went camping. Me and the boys used to go camping, and we called it man's camping. We go with some other friends. And those are times that I look back on now, and they are warm, glowing memories that live in my heart and my soul forever. You know, the different things we came up with as family to make traditions. That was Kathleen's big thing. We need to make traditions, right? You just go through life and you kind of bounce around and do things. But traditions are what make life memorable and wonderful. So we started, okay, how do we come up? What traditions can we come up with? We want to make our own, right? Different than my family, different than her family. What traditions could we have? And we wanted to include the kids so that it would be memorable for them. So we went from a artificial Christmas tree, right? My family had artificial trees. Hers, it was a big thing in the 70s, late 60s and 70s, have an artificial tree. But I always liked the idea of a real tree, you know, the smell of a pine tree at Christmas, because I never had that as a kid. We had a artificial tree, and we put it together, me and my father and my brother. It was wonderful, but I wanted a real tree. And Kathleen says, hey, why don't we go to the Christmas tree farm as a family, and we pick out our tree, we cut it down, bring it home, and let's give it a try. So we loaded everybody up. We took the dog. We had a beautiful Labrador. We got everybody in the thing. We went out to the country, which even though we're on the shore, there's still the country, which is to the west of us. And Ted knew a guy who had a Christmas tree farm. And we went there and we walked the fields. I can't tell you how big it was, but there was thousands and thousands of Christmas trees. And we walked around as a family, laughing and joking, and the dog running around. And we'd pick out a tree. And then, of course, there was escapades when we would pick out a tree, because I had to go underneath it and cut it down. And the kids are holding up the branches. And, of course, they're letting the branches go. They're hitting me in the head. There's spiders dropping down on me. You know, and we're all laughing as you know, pick up the branch. It's in my face. And, you know, they would pick it up, and then the next person would drop the branch. It would be pretty fun. Then how do we drag it back? All right, we had the little sled, and who's pulling the sled? And just it turned into be a yearly outing for our family. And then on the way home, we would stop at a restaurant and get a meal. And it became a tradition in our home that we would go and get a live Christmas tree somewhere. Well, as my son Joe grew up and got married, him and his wife decided that they wanted to do that tradition as well. So, of course, one of the first ones we did was a combined family, his family and our family. And we all went and got Christmas trees, which was interesting. But it was really wonderful to watch him underneath the tree as the branches are dropped on him by his sisters and brothers. And, you know, and we're all laughing and we went for food. It was wonderful. So that became a great tradition in our family. And then we looked around and said, okay, well, that worked out pretty good. How do we make other traditions? What else can we do to make other great traditions? So throughout the years, you know, we would go apple picking in September. There's a lot of orchards around here. And we would take the kids and go apple picking. You walk through the apple orchards, you pick out you're eating as many apples as you're buying, as you're walking around. You know, you're just eating apples. It never really ends. But it's a lot of fun. You know, the kids are climbing up in the trees and they're picking apples, all these different apples. And so we made apple picking like our start of the fall festivities, because it was mid to late September. The weather's starting to get cool here in the Northeast. And you'd go out and you'd apple pick, and, you know, it was really great. For Halloween, when I was a kid, we trick-or-treated. Our parents basically opened the door with our crazy homemade costumes and a pillowcase. And out the door we would go after school, and we didn't come home till way after dark, unless we had to come home and dump our pillowcase and go back out again. So that was always a lot of fun, as trick-or-treating was a good time for me and my friends. When I had children, things had changed a little bit. My parents didn't go trick-or-treating with us. I mean, when we were real little, they did, but not from the time, you know, middle school on through whenever. They didn't come with us, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade, they didn't come with us. We went by ourselves. But when we went, when we took the kids when they were little, we started pulling them around in a cart. And we met other parents that were pulling their kids around in a cart so they could trick-or-treat. And all the parents brought their cocktails with them. So everybody's walking around, either drinking a beer, a glass of wine, or a cocktail, and the kids are running up to the doors. It became a really wonderful tradition that we would do as a neighborhood. And you didn't plan it. You didn't say, Mary and Bob, what time are you going? You just went out, and next thing you know, you hooked up, and there they got their little carriage and their kids in costumes, and you did it. So the bigger point, I guess, I'm making here is that, you know, we look back through the years at these things, and you wonder, where did the time go? And I know there's a lot of consternation now in our country, and a lot of things are in flux, and we're upset, and we're so upset. And I could go on and on today about what's upset. I just wanted to take this trip down memory lane. So the hope that you'll sit with your family and go down your memory lane, and you'll remember these really wonderful times, even if they were difficult and you made them good. But that was my point about my mother. She never talked about poverty. She never talked about them being poor, not having enough to eat with 13, 15 people in a house that was meant for six people. She talked about the love that they had in the home. And that's the same thing I look back at my family. So many years later, Jack off to college, Marisa's off to college, Joe and Alex are married and out of the house. I don't look back, and even though at the time some of it was difficult to have no money, to wonder, you know, what we were going to do. We had Marisa in the hospital one time, and my credit card only had a $2,000 limit on it, and we had spent it on doctors. You know, we used a credit card to pay for doctors and medicines for her when she was little. She was sick. She had a liver problem, and we had to go to Philadelphia for the doctors, and I remember getting there, and the credit card is maxed out, and we have to be there for 5 days. And I remember calling a credit card company and saying, hey, listen, I don't have any more income, but I'm in this emergency. And they raised my credit limit. They said, of course, we understand. They raised the credit limit, and we could stay in the city with my daughter while she went through. She had a surgery and some recovery and stuff when she was little. But we stayed at Ronald McDonald House in Philadelphia. Now, if you ever want to come up with a charity that you want to give to, you see, some are good, some are bad. I've heard about Ronald McDonald House our whole lives, right? I always did. Ronald McDonald House, you can leave your money in the quarters and all that stuff. When we were trying to stay there, we stayed at one of the fancy hotels that was way more money than we could afford to stay at. But Marisa was going to be there for about 2 weeks in Philadelphia. So how were we possibly going to stay in Philly? At the time, $150 a night, we didn't have that. That wasn't on my credit card. So somebody suggested Ronald McDonald House. I said, I had always heard, I don't know what that is. I went and found it. Well, first of all, I think it belonged originally to a mansion in Philadelphia that originally belonged, I think, I could be getting this wrong, but the owner of the Philadelphia Inquirer or one of the big newspapers owned the mansion that the Ronald McDonald House in. So first of all, it's a mansion. It's absolutely gorgeous. And they had built on an extension to it, some new rooms and some new eating areas, because it was filled with people. So we get there and we call them and they say, of course, come on over. We have a room for you and your wife and your son, and you can come over and visit your daughter every day in the house, whatever you have to do. And I said, well, what's the cost of this? And they said, there is no cost. I said, what? There's no cost to stay here at Ronald McDonald House. I was floored. So I went and looked at it, and it was beautiful. The rooms were beautiful. The place was beautiful. You know what they ask of you? They ask that while you're living in the house, you help maintain the mansion. So they would say, we have a list of jobs if you'd like to do something, you know, to earn your keep, I guess, kind of is that. And I said, what do you got? And they were like, well, we need someone to vacuum the entryway in the mornings. Do you think you could do that? There's a closet right there. There's a vacuum. You just vacuum the entryway. I couldn't believe that that's all they wanted from me. They said, listen, we don't ask a lot from people because people are caught up in being upset. Sometimes the children are doing really poorly. Sometimes they die. So we're not here to, you know, take a pound of flesh from you for letting you stay in a room. This is a charity that is funded by people and by the Ronald McDonald Corporation. So I was thrilled every morning to go down and vacuum. I guess the entryway, vestibule, whatever you call it. And I did a great job every day because I was so grateful that this place was here. Now, I have no connection to Ronald McDonald House. Don't get me wrong. I don't own stock in McDonald's. I don't own anything like that. I can tell you I needed this charity at the time when I was young, and it was magnificent. When I look back at that, I remember driving over to the hospital every day, going in to see Marisa Joy, leaving Kathleen there, and I took Alex and Joe, and we went and did whatever we had to do for the day, take them to the park or whatever, and then come back, pick Kathleen up, go see the baby, and then go back to Ronald McDonald. And they had full meals there that people donated. Individual people, like restaurants, would donate meals. And you'd go in, and there'd be a full dinner, a full breakfast, a full lunch. And it was really good. It wasn't, cheap garbage. It was really good stuff. A great charity. A really great charity. If you want to donate to something, that's a good one. So keep that in mind. But that's the kind of thing you look back on all these years and you have these moments. I was so grateful. And she turned out fine. Everything worked out great for her. While I was there, there were kids that it didn't turn out great for. And we saw those parents in the Ronald McDonald House. And it was just a comfort to be there. But through the years, there's ups and downs, right? That was a down thing for us. That was hard for us to deal with this little baby having a problem. We had two other boys that deserved a life, and they were caught up in this whole thing. As we've gotten time away from it, and we look back on it now, it is really a wonderful experience that we had to have. We wouldn't have chosen that. We had to have it because of the circumstance, and it turned out wonderful. So I can't thank Ronald McDonald House enough or all the people that donate to it. Over the years, I've written checks to Ronald McDonald House because I know there's other families there that are also having a hard time and they need the place. So as we go forward, we only got a couple minutes left in this segment. As I'm reminiscing down this path, and I'm saying, and here we are now, empty nesters, Kathleen and I. We took Jack down to college, and we dropped him off at college, and made sure he was all in his room, had all his stuff, and at that point, he wanted us to go. It's time for Mom and Dad to leave. He's a very independent kid, very smart kid. He's an awesome, awesome guy, my son Jack. And he's off doing his own thing, and Kathleen and I said, well, what do you want to do? Hey, listen. We don't have to be anywhere. We don't have to answer to anybody at this point. So why don't we go get a hotel and we'll stay at a hotel. So we ended up finding our way to Baltimore on our way home. And we went to the Inner Harbor and we stayed at the Inner Harbor. We went out to dinner. We walked around. We had cocktails. It was wonderful. And he got up the next morning and we said, what do you want to do? I don't know. Let's sleep in and let's go to lunch. And we'll get home when we get home. Because there's nobody there tapping their feet, waiting to be fed or be taken somewhere or to get something. We were on our own. Well, since that happened, that was August, end of August. Since that time, we've kind of been busy, really busy with our business and trying to do the right thing. But we do have this newfound sense of freedom to the point that I was laughing and joking the other day. And I said, we got married in a particular church close by here. And we were parishioners there for a long time. We were on the pre-Cana team. We were very, very involved with the church. And then there were some things that went on that we didn't care for at the church. And we moved. We went to another church close to our house, very close to our house. And we got connected there. And Kathleen worked there in the Sunday school division. And I was a Eucharistic minister. And we did all, church things. We really got involved in the church. And then there was a priest problem. One of those priest problems popped up. And we were really upset with how it was handled. And we left. And we went to another church where we felt more comfortable. Well, it's probably been, 10 years. And, things change and we're, where are we going to go? We should find, what do we want to do? Well, here we are. We didn't even realize it. But we went back to the original church where we got married just to try Mass because we were late one day. Instead of going to our church, let's go to that church over there. We got married and we loved it. It was beautiful and wonderful. The people were warm and wonderful. So much so that we've now switched back to that church. And we're getting involved again. So it's like a full circle. We've gone from being teenagers in love to young parents, raising kids, working careers, doing things, middle-aged people, surviving, getting through, working on pensions, getting everybody to college, getting everybody out the door, getting people married. Now they're all off on their own. We're back right where we started. We're like teenagers running around the house, having a good time every day, whenever we want, wherever we want, whatever we want to do. So it's not a bad thing to find yourself as an empty nester. We stay very close to our kids. We visit our grandchildren all the time. Our kids come home from college. It's really wonderful. So looking back, it's been a beautiful, beautiful experience. And I hope this little run down memory lane with Lieutenant Joe will help you run down your memory lane and think about the good things we have in life and how wonderful life really can be. We'll be back in a minute with more Chasing Justice.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice with your host, Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro. Now, our first segment there, that trip down memory lane, was fun for me, and I appreciate you indulging me as you ride in your car or sit at home or listen on the app or wherever you listen to America Out Loud. I think sometimes we need to take a deep breath. Now, this is not the first time I've done a show like this where I kind of take it easy, I calm down, I stop with the ranting and raving, because can we really make a difference in that? You know, it's interesting. Like I was saying, there's so much going on that doesn't seem right, right? We all get that sense, don't we? That the things that are going on are not right. It's not. Look what the Biden administration is doing. Inflation, they said, is really about 10%. Well, you know, go out and buy some steaks. Now, you used to get 5 or 6 really good steaks, and it would cost you $50. You didn't do it all the time, but you know what? It's a good steak. It's a good meal. Everybody likes it. You get 5 good, delicious, juicy steaks, $50. Kathleen went out the other day. It was $98 for the same 5 steaks, right? At the holidays, one of the things we do when all the kids come back and we have everybody here and friends and family over is we do filet mignon. Make a nice filet mignon. Everybody has a wonderful dinner. It's expensive, but you know what? It's a holiday, so we don't mind going for it once in a while. Well, it used to be $100 for one of the big filet mignon. You know what it is now? Kathleen says, it's $196. So this year we're having ziti, I guess, instead of having filet mignon. You know, back in the day when we were young people, there was this commercial out there about, there was a product called Hamburger Helper, where basically you took a half a pound of hamburger meat, you fried it up, and you added this stuff to it, and it had flavoring in it, and it made your meal, your boring, cheap meal, taste better, and you moved on. Well, we used to have what we would call helper. That's how far back in the day we would, try and get it. So I'm saying, Kathy, maybe we go back to helper. We've gone back to so many other things. You know, church acting like teenagers. Teenagers in love, and maybe now we'll go back to helper too. So it's just an interesting world. Where does that come from? That comes from political choices that are made. Now we look and see, you know, the dreaded orange man who was so hated by the left and by the right. Let's not ever forget that. The reason that we're suffering the way we are now under these policies, the Biden administration, a president who does not seem to be all there mentally, puts our country in danger, because the rest of the world that is dangerous sees the same thing we all see. Only they're not kidding themselves about it like we are here in America, pretending that he's not weak and frail and he's got some problems with how he thinks. And it's not his fault. I don't point to the guy and say he's doing it on purpose. He's just an older man, and I don't think he's really capable of the cognitive things that he needs to have to properly run the country. I think he's also being pushed in many directions by very, very radical elements of his party. Now, I know a lot of family and friends are consider themselves Democrats. And I've always said we can have an honest conversation about anything. Doesn't matter what party you're in, where you're from. We can have differences of opinion, and we can talk about things and what priorities should be, and we can kind of work things out. Does it feel like you can do that now? I mean, right now the Senate is split 50-50, and the breaking point is the Vice President, Kamala Harris. With a 50-50 Senate, and I think the Congress, Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House because they have 6 or 8 more congressmen than the Republicans do. Right? It's not 159-6, it's like 8 difference. That is the thinnest of margins. That really represents, I think, the very big split in our country that's obvious in just about everything and anything that we do every day. Shouldn't we be maybe working a little closer together to honestly govern the country? Okay, you want to do some crazy liberal things? Well, there's some conservative things we want to do. Let's get together on them and see where we can tolerate each other and make the country good for everyone. Wouldn't that be a good idea for us to do? But no, we don't see that happening. Now, I am going to tell you that I have to be honest and say that I admire the Democrats a little bit. Even though I don't like their policies, I think their policies are wrong for our country, for everyone in our country. Not just me or not my family, for everyone. They're wrong for everyone. But I have to admire the fact that they have the guts to... They don't care. It's the thinnest majority. We're in charge. We're doing what we want. We're going to ram things through. We're going to make it happen. Could you imagine the Republicans doing that? Can you honestly imagine the Republican Party having an 8-person majority and a 50-50 split with the vice president and actually doing conservative things anyway? No way. No, I can't imagine it. They would bend over backwards let's include this for our friends on the left. Let's do this. And they would sabotage themselves like they always do. I couldn't imagine a Republican Party acting so ruthlessly with the little bit of power they got. And, you know, whether it's one more majority or 8 or 200, you're still in control. And our friends on the left, they're not afraid to wield that power. Our friends on the right, they always seem skittish. They always seem afraid. They always seem afraid to push. We're not going to go too far for our agenda. We want to make sure we're liked and everyone like. We want to make sure they know we don't hate people. When there's no indication whatsoever by policies on the right that they hate people. They are depicted that way, but it's not really true. Wanting the country to do well financially means everyone has the opportunity to do well. When there's lots of jobs going on, the Trump economy. When the economy was booming the way it was, you had choices of jobs. You could go up in your pay scale by going to a different company that was moving and needs your talent. There was opportunity for people who were at the lower socioeconomic end to go, hey, let me jump into the job market. Let me maybe get a starting position and work my way into management and learn how to do different things. Do we have that now? We don't. Oh, sure, it's the pandemic. Lieutenant Joe, it's the pandemic. That's why we don't have any jobs, because people can't go to work. They can't do it. Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. But I'll tell you right now, you see all the help wanted signs? Everywhere, right? There's lots and lots of websites you can go to that help you find jobs. Very high paying jobs. And the standards for those positions have come down a little because everybody needs help and they can't find people to work. So before, maybe you needed a bachelor's degree and maybe a master's degree and some extra special training and all this experience. Instead, they're going, okay, do you have a four-year degree in hay baling? Good. We just need you to have a four-year degree. Come on in. We'll teach you how to do the job, right? And you can get into positions now you never could have gotten into before, but people are not taking them. And why is that? Why are we sitting back and seeing what's going to happen? That's not good. That kind of mentality is not good. And I think a lot of it has to do with the pandemic and the way we've been played on the pandemic. It is dangerous. The virus is dangerous. I don't want to get the virus. I don't want to have to deal with the virus. At 59, the virus could kill me. So I certainly don't want to get the virus. But at the same time, you know, statistically, someone my age in good health will survive the virus pretty easily. So we could get out there and go back to work. We could. Let's look at some of these other things. You know, we had General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and all these other generals testifying now. And basically, they're saying that Joe Biden lied to us. You know, if anybody saw the testimony, it was shocking. First of all, General Milley and his cohorts, they tried to obfuscate and get away from calling the president out. Because if you remember, Joe Biden was asked about the debacle in Afghanistan, removing the military before removing the civilians, which ended up leaving Americans still to this day trapped in Afghanistan with the Taliban. The loss of $85 billion worth of high-end military equipment given to a terrorist nation. And the loss of our 13 soldiers by a terrorist bomb. So the president, President Biden, has come out and said, specifically, he was never told of any of these concerns. Nobody ever recommended to him that he keep troops there. The whole idea was to get them out. And that was what a lot of the testimony was about. You had these senators, Republican senators. Isn't it funny, though? Not one serious question from a Democrat. Why would that be? Wouldn't they be concerned with their country's safety as well and want to get to the bottom of what happened here? Politics is destroying us. It's killing us. It's making our nation weak every single day. But all three of these military people who are supposed to advise the president were busy doing other things. They were worrying about other things and not standing up and saying the truth. But today they kind of got called out, and none of them want to have the legacy that they went along with these terrible decisions by Joe Biden to pull the military and then leave the people and then try and get the people. And what a nightmare. They basically said that they did advise the president to leave military. They did advise the president to all this other stuff. And Joe Biden, apparently the White House is hitting back. And we're going to see where this goes. Is this going to be a battle between these two groups? Are they going to stand up and fight each other more? I don't know. Now, the nonsense continues. And see, I'm trying not to be upset about these things today, but because there's so many of them. You know, my father-in-law, Ted, he's from a different generation. He's from a generation when things were wrong, you could count on certain government entities to step in and try and do the right thing. All of our politicians, even different parties, all wanted the same freedom and liberty and expanding our rights and opportunity and all that. They just went about it in different ways. Well, in the last 50, 60 years, our friends on the left have really taken a turn and headed towards socialism and communism, and that is why we have such a disparate set of policies on the same situation that's going on in any given situation in our country. You know, President Trump closed down the borders on the southern border. Why? Because there were literally thousands and millions of people coming here illegally, circumventing the system, coming in as economic migrants, not migrants fleeing death and torture in their countries, as people who would be refugees. And he said, we need to stop that. We can't afford to just take the world's population because they want to come here. Now, our friends on the left, clearly, if anyone can't see it for what it is now and admit very clearly that the entire push of the Biden administration and the radical left is clearly to bring in as many undocumented people as possible, get them into the country, settle them into as many red states as possible. Then, very shortly thereafter, you will see the call for, well, these people are now part of our country. They should be citizens. And then very shortly thereafter, if not within the same attempt, you will see, and if they're here, they should be allowed to vote. And the whole purpose here is to overturn the will of the current American people who will not go socialist. Now, even though many people are leftists in our country and believe in a lot of it, for us to go full-blown socialism would probably take another 10 or 12 or year, 12 or 15 years. By doing this, we're looking at potentially the next election cycle for president in 2024, that they would be, if they maintain power, Democrats maintain power in the House and the Senate, they would be able to push these bills through very quickly, and Joe Biden will sign wherever they point his finger and tell him to sign. And there goes your country, taken without a shot being fired. Pretty funny. I think there was a Russian premier, Nikita Khrushchev, who said many years ago that they will take us without firing a shot. And I think they're right. You know, the insurrection comes from within, and it has because it's been played. And I don't think the majority of people, my friends and family who are on the left, want to see the destruction of America. They want good things. They want people to get along. They want fairness. They want justice. And these concepts have been twisted. They've been twisted to be able to attack the traditions and the institutions that have made America what it is. And that's kind of where we're at right now. And this is sad, and it's scary, and it's concerning. We saw our FBI, the vaunted FBI, a highly respected law enforcement agency across the world. We saw them get a bad black eye when their leadership, not the rank and file agents in the field, because they're good men and women trying to do the right thing, but their leadership, which are highly political, appointed political people. In the past, they held their law enforcement credentials very close to their hearts. And even though they were political appointee, they did what they had to do as law enforcement. What we've seen with James Comey and with the current administration, Mr. Ray, I think, I don't know what else to say about him. We saw what they did with faking up FISA warrants so they could, you know, spy on the Trump campaign and then elect Trump and then the President Trump. There's no question that they did that. No one has been held to account. It was all part of a left-wing plot, and nobody has been held to account. Now, we are seeing the January 6th insurrection. That narrative is starting to come apart. We are seeing that there's evidence coming out now that the FBI had informants in the crowd. Right now, we know of one informant that was basically texting their handler, the FBI handler, that, hey, this is what's going on. This is what the crowd is doing. And it's indicators that there are probably many more informants that are going to come forward that say they were working for the FBI. Therefore, the FBI knew the whole thing. And the story that's beginning to develop is that, well, this insurrection wasn't a pre-planned kind of event. This wasn't a conspiracy like they all decided to get together and attack the Capitol and take over the country, as though they could have done that by taking the building. But actually, this was more of a spontaneous protest that got out of control by a bunch of people who were really upset by what's going on in our country. And they took action that was inappropriate. And I've said that how many times can I say it? They should not have gone into the Capitol. It was inappropriate. It's trespassing. They're not allowed to do that. And they were wrong, and they should be held to account for that. But if we say it's an insurrection, and that's why many, many people are being held without bond in prison since January. We don't do this to murderers anymore. You know, the whole bail reform thing where they let murderers out, they let killers out, rapists out, drug dealers out. These people are truly political prisoners. These are political prisoners, and I'm not having an easy time saying it. But when you look at these left-wing tyrannical regimes around the world, people who speak out are taken off the street, they're disappeared, they're stuck in prison, they languish there in prison, with or without charges, because they said something political. Well, isn't that what we're seeing now? These people made a political statement. Idiotic, going into the Capitol, they shouldn't have done that. But they were trying to voice their opinion, their concern about their country, and they're being held without trial, without bail, because of what they did. How dare they go against the regimes, right? We see that. We also see, who's the lieutenant colonel? And, you know, forgive me for not having his name right at my hand. But he came out a few weeks ago, and he made a video, and I think he put it up on YouTube, where he called out General Milley and all the leadership for lack of accountability on the horrible things that happened in Afghanistan. And as a lieutenant colonel, you know, one of the things, the chain of command and obeying the chain of command is extremely important for military cohesiveness. You can't have sergeants talking about captains and captains talking about generals. And, you know, you just can't do that. You have to maintain control to maintain the organization. So I guess in reality, what the lieutenant colonel did was inappropriate, coming out and making a statement. But what he was doing was calling them out and saying, hey, listen, this was so horrible. If a young soldier, airman, seaman, had come out and done anything that caused a problem, they'd be immediately court-martialed and charged. And here we have the leadership of the military causing the deaths of so many people, leaving behind all the equipment. It's such a bungled loss in Afghanistan that no one's accountable, not one word. So he was calling them out. And for that, he even said in his thing, he says, you know what's going to happen to me? I'm going to lose my command. I'm probably going to be stripped of my pension, and I'm going to be thrown out of the military. And he was. He came out, he made his statement, and he was penalized. And they put a gag order on him, and they told him he couldn't speak any further. But he did come out and speak. He spoke again. He had more to say. And now they've arrested him and put him in jail. And he's in a military brig right now. Charges unknown. But he's another one who spoke out, and he's a political prisoner being held. This is happening more and more. What makes you think they can't come get you? What makes you think they can't come and get you if they don't like what you have to say? We already see our friends on the left embracing this cancel culture for any left-wing idea that they come up with. If you don't agree with it, comply with it, and go 100% with it, they'll cancel you, because anything else is hatred, is racism, is whatever ism they want to throw at you. And what do our companies do? Our companies back off. They fire you because they can't have a racist in their company. They come after you, and they allow you to be destroyed. So people are being silenced. Don't we get that? Don't we remember? Let's go back in time with Lieutenant Joe here and remember umpteen months ago when I talked about one of the pillars of freedom is the freedom of speech. Without the freedom of speech, we have no ability to maintain our freedom or liberty. Justice cannot be served in an atmosphere when freedom of speech is squelched, shut down, and destroyed. And we are seeing that right before our very eyes, every single day. We see it getting worse and worse. You know, the FBI has now, we're finding out they have informants in that insurrection crowd. So the narrative is a lie. What are we supposed to do about that now? Can we trust anything that comes out of their mouths? I don't know that we can. We're not going to get the truth. Is the media going to report the truth? No, the media is not going to report the truth. So we have no idea what to think and believe. We see the president lying. He just got called out by his own generals that he lied directly to us. Is there a report anywhere on any of these news outlets saying, holy moly, we have clear information that the... Could you imagine if three of Trump's generals came out on the record, under oath, in the Senate, and basically called him out and said he lied to the American people? What would happen? The world would be spinning. It would be on fire. They would be going crazy. There'd be impeachment proceedings immediately. Here, we have one more horrific event taking place right in front of our eyes, involving all the way up to the President of the United States, lying to the American people, and nothing. I'm at a loss for words. See, I'm trying to stay calm. I'm trying to stay relaxed as I take all of this in, because I've been saying for a long time that this cannot be maintained. This atmosphere is not sustainable. How many more blows can freedom and liberty take before it gives in? You know, this mandate for vaccine. They were all saying a year ago, there'll be no vaccine cards. You will not be forced to get a vaccine. The vaccine is bad, as a matter of fact. Orange Man created it. It's evil. Now, I think they just fired hundreds of medical workers in the state of New York for not getting vaccinated. Why would medical workers not want to get vaccinated? Did you ask that question of yourself? Why would people who work in the medical profession not get the perfectly safe vaccine? Because we're not given the truth about it. We don't know. People are trying to make decisions for themselves. And now you're being told, and it's coming to the private sector. You better do it or you're going to lose your job. You better do it or you can't do work anywhere. You better do it. Is this freedom and liberty, my friends? Is this what freedom and liberty looks like? These are questions that we all have to really think about clearly, because this is not the America that I grew up in only, you know, 59 years ago. This is not the America of my forefather. This is not Ted's America. You know, he says all the time, why doesn't the Supreme Court step in and do something about these lies and what they're doing? It must be very frustrating for him to have seen a country that came through World War II, saved the world, that did the right thing, the rise in everyone's fortunes, the status of life we have now, to just see all of this corruption and horror going on in America, and no one can do anything about it. So Ted, take heart. Hopefully God is watching over us, and this will change. But it only changes, my friends, if you and I and everybody demand that it changes. So I want you to think about that. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice saying, hey, listen, I'll see you down the road next time. And I'm going to have my pages of outrages back because, you know, calm is one thing, but I can't do this all the time. We'll see you next time on Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network.